Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Knight Campbell, your host for The Leading Edge, women pushing boundaries in life, adventure, and leadership. Our topic today is balance and executive leadership with Jennifer Barnes, CEO and founder of Optima Office, a CEO of the Year and National Association of Women Business Owners Resilient Woman Award finalist, as well as leader of one of the best places in San Diego to work, according to the San Diego Business Journal. Good morning, Jennifer.
Hello, what a nice intro.
Well, you've earned it. Thank you so much for being with us today. I'm excited for this conversation.
Me too. Thanks for having me.
Of course. So, Jennifer, before we dive in, what should listeners generally know about you?
Well, that's a pretty broad question, but I'll start with I am from Las Vegas, Nevada, which is not many people grow up in Las Vegas and actually move out. And I've been here in Southern California after graduating University of Arizona for about 20 years now. And I was a controller and a consultant for many years and started my own company about 8 years ago and sold my shares of that firm a couple years ago, started Optima. And so now I'm on my second successful endeavor. And we are at 65 employees currently and in the accounting and finance space and just loving it.
That's incredible. And I think I read in one of your bios that you hired a lot of those 65 employees within 90 days of starting your business. That's just must have been a crazy journey. I'm curious, what is moving through your career to this point of being a two-time kind of successful business owner, CEO, been like for you?
Well, so it's been quite a journey, you know, and you live and you learn along the way. And, you know, the second endeavor here at Optima has just been an incredible journey, you know, going from, you know, a successful company where I had 90 employees to having a failed partnership and literally walking home that day when I had gotten kicked out and, you know, deciding on what I was going to do. I just said, you know, I'm not going to start out of my living room again. I'm just going to go big. And so I ended up bringing about 25 of the employees came with me. And it was a pretty crazy ride for the first 90 days, definitely. But it was all completely worth it. And, you know, we've got about 70% of our employees are working women who are just, you know, smart and have you know, children, and so they want the work-life balance. And, you know, to me, it's just about taking care of people and doing good work and having fun with it.
I just love that story of some real hardship, a failed partnership, and then instead of feeling down on your luck or sorry for yourself, you walk away, take a bunch of the workforce, and create this company that you're passionate about. I'm curious about what it was like as a woman, because you don't see a whole lot of women in your industry and you don't see a whole lot of women at your level. Was anything different for you as a woman?
You know, when I first started consulting, I was in my late 20s, which is kind of early to start consulting anyway. So I was a young female in a completely male-dominated industry. And it was, to me, I don't really look at it like a challenge. I kind of just mended in, you know, I just tried to act the part and not let any perceptions bother me. I mean, I knew I looked young. I knew that I was in a male-dominated industry, but, you know, I guess fake it till you make it to a certain extent. You know, I go up to the, I just go up to big groups of guys and introduce myself and just act like I was one of them. And, you know, over time, I just kind of just fit in naturally. I've never really let it bother me. But I think part of that, too, is a lot of women do let it bother them. And they, you know, don't have that sense of confidence that they should have. And you don't need to let it bother you. You just, you know, have a sense of confidence and tenacity and go after what you want. And who cares if it's a male or a female or, you know, young or old or black or white, or it doesn't really matter. You know, just do good work, be a good person, do the right thing. And none of that stuff should matter.
Enough said. All great pieces of advice. Have you always had this confidence, or is this something that you've built up from childhood? What has led to this sense of confidence and ability to be tenacious and follow your dreams?
You know, I do think I was somewhat born that way. You know, I've always been strong and confident. My mom was incredibly selfless and kind when I was growing up. I mean, she's still selfless and kind. So I learned just to have a lot of empathy and kindness towards others. And then my dad really pushed me into education and getting my degrees. And, you know, that was super important to succeed. So I was raised well and a good family and a good upbringing, and I just naturally kind of rose to the top, and I never really looked at challenges as something I couldn't overcome. It was just, what's next? What's next? Let's keep going. Go big. Go big. Keep going. Keep going. So I have a kind of inner drive that kind of keeps me going.
If there's a takeaway so far, it's just go big. You've said it a couple of times, and I love that. But you also, when I ask about confidence, you went right to your mother, who is selfless and kind, and you talked about learning to be empathetic and kind, which are traditionally strengths for female leaders, which, of course, men can and should emulate, and you have the confidence. How do you balance being kind and empathetic and taking care of your employees and also being directive and confident?
You know, I really strive at having a happy mix between tough-minded and kind-hearted, because you don't want to get into that ruinous empathy stage where people just walk all over you and you are too empathetic and, you know, people take advantage of you. But you also don't want to be aggressive and you know, like a crazy person where people fear you and you're super mean. So it's just a happy mix, and it does take a lot of effort. I've done a lot of emotional intelligence training and coaching. I try to read as much as possible. I was actually in a Vistage presentation with the book Radical Candor, and I just thought that was a pretty interesting book on, you know, focus on praise, give constructive feedback, you know, challenge people directly so that they know what the score is and they can be accountable and they want to be held accountable. But you also need to solicit feedback from your employees and the people that work with you. Like, how can I be better? How do they make you feel? You know, thinking about how are you making them feel? Thinking about, you know, these are human beings, and even if they mess up, well, everybody makes mistakes. Don't continue making mistakes. I have been known to be pretty tough. I mean, if someone's going to continue making mistakes and not do a good job, they probably shouldn't work for me. I have pretty high expectations. But on the other hand, they know I really care. They know I'm kind and I care, and I'm going to take good care of them. I'm going to do whatever I can to be a good employer. I'm definitely not going to let them slack and do a bad job.
I appreciate that you point out that it is hard work, and you've done a lot of training and put thought into balancing tough-minded and kind-hearted. And I think last time we spoke, you also recommended Radical Candor. So I read it. I also thought it was a great book. For people listening, check out Radical Candor. It might change the way you lead. Jennifer, it's hard for women, I think, to deal with misogyny and bias, either overt or kind of under the surface, maybe implicit, maybe not even recognized by men. Do you have any advice for women working through kind of your journey, trying to get to the top levels of leadership, to deal with what's really unfair misogyny and bias?
I mean, I'm going to go back again to just don't let it bother you and just have that sense of confidence. Speak up as if you were in a room of women. Speak up and hold your ground. Be strong in your convictions and don't let people bully you. I mean, there's a lot of bullies out there. There's female bullies as well. And it's not allowing people to bully you and just speaking up. If I'm in a boardroom and I'm on the board of directors and I'm the only female in the room of a group of powerful men, I am not going to for a second feel like I can't speak and I'm not heard. They wouldn't have selected me on that board. I wouldn't be in that room if I shouldn't be heard. And so don't ever doubt yourself and just have an extreme sense of confidence that your voice should be heard and what you have to say is important. And there should be some kind of balance in the room. Women have a very unique perspective to offer. And there's a reason that there are more and more women rising to the top and becoming business leaders and being on boards. And the 2020 board initiative of women should be on boards. We have a great perspective to offer, and we're intelligent, and we can be kind and empathetic and just offer a different point of view. So just don't ever, I guess, just don't ever doubt that.
That's a great visual of just speaking up as if you're in a room of women. How do these powerful men receive that when you speak up and you're assertive with your ideas? Is there pushback, or do they tend to go along with what you have to say?
I think it's a mix of both. I don't think there's a clear-cut generalization of every single man is going to act a certain way. I think especially men who are raised by strong women or who have sisters or strong daughters or a strong wife, they're going to receive it well. They're going to respect it. They're going to actually enjoy the challenge and enjoy the different point of view. But then there's the flip side where you do get a lot of pushback or just kind of almost a condescending kind of nature. Oh, okay, little girl. Oh, we get it. Let's let somebody else talk. Or, you know, I've had quite a bit of that over my life, you know, being in a male-dominated industry for as long as I've been, where, you know, I do get almost, I don't want to say rudely interrupted, but just kind of talked down to. I think I'm getting a lot less of that as I'm now in my early 40s. But even being a younger female, you know, you are going to get people who are going to talk over you or interrupt you or, you know, think that what you have to say isn't important. You know what? I do have a pretty high sense of confidence in who I am and what I have to offer the world. So I just kind of ignore it. But then I take mental note of it. And I try to be even more articulate the next time I speak in front of that same group, or maybe make a stronger argument that's more fact-based instead of any kind of feeling or emotion-based. Because I think that it's easy to argue with feelings or opinions, but it's really difficult to argue with facts, right? 2 + 2 = 4. You can't argue that. So if you stick to facts and you stick to things that people can't argue with, then it just makes things even, you know, just makes your point that much stronger.
Right. And there's a lot of literature around the idea of that's what she said, the idea that you have a great idea and perspective and you say it, and typically all the men in the room say, oh, thanks, little girl. And then two people down the line say the same thing as if it was his idea. Have you experienced that? And do you have any advice for people experiencing that?
I think the only way to really just nip that is almost sarcasm to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. You could just say, oh, yes, exactly. I'm so glad you agree with me. That's exactly what I just mentioned. I'm so glad that we're on the same page. You know, that was kind of the point that I was trying to dive into. But I like the way that you took my idea and said it in a different, you know. So you kind of just do it. I'm a very sarcastic person. I could just take things and, you know, sometimes that's perceived the wrong way. You know, maybe I'm being snotty or something, but I've said that before, and I just say it in a very articulate way.
That's great. I'm just laughing here, imagining the reaction, and what a great way to deal with something that's not really fair and put it back on them to realize what's going on. So Jennifer, we've talked a couple of times. I always enjoy talking to you because we inevitably talk about snowboarding and mountains and snow. And from what I understand, you really keep your weekends largely to yourself. You try not to do a lot of work, and you make a point of getting away, getting out to the mountains, snowboarding. We were just talking about you going to Catalina. How do you do that? Because I see a lot of executives just working 6-7 days a week, 80 to 100 hours a week, and feeling stressed out, burned out.
I'd like to think I'm a very good delegator, and I try not to do things that are below my level. You know, I've been there, done that. I was a staff accountant at Petco for 3 years, and my job was to reconcile bank accounts across the nation. And I can't tell you how many bank reconciliations I did at the time that I worked for Petco. And yes, I can do a bank reconciliation, but why would I spend my time doing that when that's something I did at 22 years old? I mean, it's been almost 20 years from then. So it's recognizing the skills that you've learned over the years and then finding the best person other than yourself to do them. So I try really hard just not doing anything that somebody else can do. So I try to empower my team, and work-life balance is really important to me. I get 8 to 9 hours of sleep every single night. You know, if I have to get up early or, you know, only get 6-7 hours, I'm just not as sharp and clear as if I got a full night's sleep for me. And on the weekends, yeah, I do not work. I mean, unless I'm really behind or there's a big project or there's a couple of new big clients that come in and I've got some stuff I've got to do, I really just, 98% of weekends, I do no work at all. And that's just been a, you know, routine of mine, I guess, for the last 6 or 7 years. It's important to me to relax. I mean, this last weekend we had a really, really nice weekend, and snowboard season is important to me. I've been snowboarding for 26 years now. So,
wow.
You know, I hit, even though with COVID, I still had 12 days on the mountain this year. And then last year, I think I had 16, 17 days on the mountain. So find time for yourself. Find time to do things that you love. And even though people think, you know, I'm too busy. Well, what are you busy doing? Isn't that something that someone else can do? You know, get an assistant. Fractionalize your accounting. Don't do your bookkeeping yourself. Don't do your HR yourself. You're probably not a human resource expert. You know, you probably don't know how to do all your own marketing or your website or your IT. Fractionalize the services that you don't know how to do or that you're not skilled at, or that are, it's better to hire someone else to do it, and then that way you can focus on, you know, where the best use of your time is and where the most value that you can bring to your own organization rather than just trying to do everything.
Be a good delegator and free up that time, and it makes you more energized and sharper, especially when you need to have a little sarcasm in the boardroom and say, that's a really good point. I'm glad that you agree with me. I've had a conversation with a woman recently who started kind of at the bottom of her organization, has worked really hard over the last decade or two, and is now toward the top of her organization. And something she mentioned that I thought of as you were talking was that she found that people still see her as someone who can do the bottom of the organization stuff and give her menial tasks like taking notes or reconciling bank accounts. Do you have any advice for a woman who's worked up her organization and maybe has to deal with perceptions of, well, you've done that for the last 10 years, why not now, even though that's really not part of her job description?
Yeah, I think that's a tough one because it does take a lot of confidence and having some willpower and be willing to speak up. I would say that you usually don't get a promotion or a bigger title or a raise until you start doing the work above you. So oftentimes people are like, well, hey, I deserve a raise, or I deserve a pay raise, or I deserve a title increase or whatever it is. And it's like, well, have you started doing the work that needs to get done at that level and showing people that you're actually capable of it? And then if you are doing the work at that level and you are capable of it, and then somebody gives you low-level work, just say, no, I'm sorry. If you don't think that I'm worth the higher level tasks that I would like to be doing, then I'll leave. And then you might just have to leave the organization. You know, you don't just keep putting up with something and be complacent with it, even though that's not what you want. You have to stand up for what you believe in and ask for more and start doing the work above you. And maybe asking to hire yourself an assistant or asking to say, who can I give this to? Can we bring an intern on? I mean, sometimes it's as simple as having an idea of, why don't we just hire someone from San Diego State or someone that just graduated, and I can pass all these tasks on to them. We can pay them, you know, $18 to $22 an hour, whatever that is, and I'll pass all my tasks down. And then, hey, I want to have the work above me, and then start doing the work. You don't need to wait for someone to give you the work. Just start asking your boss what you can help them with, or start noticing things that should be done at a higher level, and just start doing them.
That initiative is just key, and just go big. That's a theme throughout all of this. You said something that piqued my interest. You said, my weekends are mine and I don't work unless there's a big project or something, a deadline, or I have too much work backed up. How do you make that decision? There are big projects and bigger projects and massive projects. How do you decide which ones are worth working on the weekend and which ones are not?
If it's going to generate future revenue for the company, I don't want to say a significant amount of new revenue, but if it's something that if I spend a couple of hours doing this now, it's going to generate another $200,000 in revenue for the next couple of years, then I'm probably going to make time and say, okay, I don't really feel like working on the weekends, but I need to put this proposal together, or I need to get these things put together for the next, I just need to do this. So, you know, for me, if I get over 100 emails in my inbox, for example, and I'm, you know, bogged down, and I might spend a couple hours on the weekends just getting rid of some of the things in my inbox, which is definitely not a revenue generating item, but it helps me stay organized. And it's also, if I don't have something going on that weekend and I'm kind of bored, then I might say, oh, you know what, let's chip away at my inbox. Let's get a few things knocked out that I need to get knocked out. And, you know, I'm very selective with it, but I think everybody's different. I mean, there's going to be different things that are important to different people. If it's not revenue generating, you know, maybe it's something that is going to bring on a new key hire, or maybe it's something that if you do this, if you spend the time to help put together a strategic plan for your business, or come up with a new mission, or come up with a new vision, or, you know, come up with some new taglines, and it's going to help reinvent part of your company, then those are some good brainstorming types of activities that you can do on maybe more downtime. So I just try to be a bit selective. But yeah, my team does know that they're probably not going to get responses from me over the weekend if they email me.
Is that something you clearly communicate to them? And if so, how?
You know, I've been working on being as clear with my communication as possible. Sometimes I think I say something and I think I'm really clear, and then I realize I wasn't. And so I'm actually actively focusing on almost repeating myself and being having more clarity, or asking my team, what did you hear me say? Like, how is there anything you need me to clarify? Like, what did you hear me? Like, and have them reiterate what they thought I heard. And then I will literally go back, oh, you know what, I'm sorry. This is what I meant. And so I think it's constantly clarifying and being clear. But my HR director didn't know that I didn't work on the weekends. And so she works on the weekends, you know, and she'll send me a whole bunch of stuff. And then she goes, I noticed you just don't really respond much on the weekends. And I said, well, I don't work on the weekends. She goes, oh, my God, I would have thought you worked all weekend long. I mean, how have we gotten this company to $5 million in 2 years if you don't work your butt off? Well, I mean, I work hard, but I work smart. I don't work too hard. I work really smart. I do the things that are, you know, important to do, and I focus a lot on referrals. I mean, people that refer us, accounting and HR clients, I mean, that's our bread and butter. So it's all about creating good relationships with people. And so it's not necessarily working hard. It's, you know, referring others and helping other people and being top of mind and being strategic. And so she's like, wow, I always thought you worked on the weekends. And So I guess I'm not always clear. I guess I could always be more. That's a goal, you know, always communicate effectively and make sure other people know where they stand and where you stand. And, you know, one thing I actually am really trying to focus on is all we'll be in the meeting and I might delegate out 10 things. But what I hadn't done in the past is say, okay, this I want done by next Friday. This, are we clear? This is a priority. I want this by next Tuesday. When do you think you can get this done by? And just that one extra follow-up on when is it going to be done or what is the goal or how long do you think this is going to take? Just adding that timeline on there gives people something to work towards. And so I just would give them out a bunch of stuff, and then a month would pass by. I'm like, wait, why is that not done? Why is this not done? Wait, why am I having to follow up? Why is this like, oh, well, you didn't tell us when you needed it by. We just had it on the list, and we figured we'll get to it when we get to it. So I've nipped that. And now I really focus on exactly when I want something done.
That specificity is so important. And Brené Brown says clear is kind, and such a great reminder of going back to radical candor, even being clear with our words and our expectations. It really helps our people. I'm really curious. I got to ask before we run out of time here, you're a snowboarder and I love it. What do you learn from that snowboarding, being outdoors, prioritizing being in the mountains? Have you learned any key lessons in life or leadership from that?
That's a great question. I don't know that I have the answer to it. I like a sense of relaxation and calm and being out in so majestic and beautiful, and there's so much land that has been untouched by us, and you know, just looking, it's just a wonderful feeling being on the top of the mountain looking at out of snow-capped mountains, and you know, and it takes some perseverance. I mean, snowboarding is not an easy sport when it is 11 degrees outside and it's snowing, or sometimes it's raining and it's, you know, you get soaking wet. You're in a blizzard. I mean, I've been at the top of Mammoth Mountain when it's a complete blizzard, white out. You can't see anything. We're about to go down, you know, a double black diamond. And yeah, you just have to trust yourself. I guess it's about trusting yourself and your skills. You know, I like going down the mountain at 45 miles an hour most of the time. But, you know, that takes some confidence in yourself, and it takes, you know, you just have to feel stable and you have to have good equipment and trust those around you, and, you know, wear your helmet, have your knee pads. I guess it's the protective gear that you have on the mountain. You know, have your own protective gear in the office that you use to make sure that you are careful and, you know, don't say or do something that could get you into trouble later. So I don't know. I guess there's some parallels.
Yeah, some resilience, perseverance, trusting yourself and having confidence and having the right gear. All great parallels, it sounds like to me. Jennifer, if people want to get in touch with you, want services from Optima Office, what are the best ways for people to get in touch with you?
Sure. Well, we do have a website, OptimaOffice.com. We have an office line as well that is always answered, and that is 858-283-1234. And then if someone wants to email me directly, they have a question about accounting or they want a proposal or see what we could do to help them, they can always email me as well. And my email is jennifer@optimaoffice.com.
Perfect. Just don't do it on the weekends. What's
you might not get a response.
Piece of, you won't hear back till Monday at least, which I love. What's a parting piece of advice you would give, particularly for women leaders?
Be strong, be courageous, have tenacity. Don't worry about what other people think. Only care about what you think and what you believe in you can accomplish. It's definitely accomplishable if you believe in yourself.
Be strong and believe in yourself. Don't worry about what other people think. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jennifer. So many pearls of wisdom and actionable insights. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate the questions and appreciate being on the show.
All right. Well, that is our show for today. Thank you, Jennifer, for being our leader today, and a special thanks to all our listeners around the world. We'll be back again for another Women Lead Radio show Monday at 9 and Fridays at 2. It's been my sincere pleasure to be your host today. Thank you for listening. Keep exploring, pushing boundaries, and leading on the edge.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.